and I'd be like, oh, you have Pokemon Puzzle League, can we fire that up? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then all of a sudden it'd become like money matches, right? For like just like put your quarters up and go through the line.
Well,
was
to be
good.
fair, we had some dumb friends that would like belly up thinking that they knew everything about video games more than you. And then they'd be like, I can beat Scott. I can beat him. And I was like, go ahead. I can't even come close. So good luck.
That was my heyday. That was like I was quarterback in high school moment, you know. It was like I was really good at PPL at one time.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 277. Wow. And wow. I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
We're here bringing you all the news, goos, and reviews we can fit into digital audio tape.
Sweet.
We're going to do it.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys, like, now that we're somewhat removed from E3, like the post-hype yeah. E3. Has any of your opinions changed? Has anything resonated with you differently since like we're kind of out of the hype? I'm out of the hype. Maybe you guys aren't, but I'm out of the hype at this point.
I think interestingly enough, E3 post E3 made me want Nintendo stuff more than I did before E3.
That's surprising.
Like now that I see that there is actual stuff coming out for the Switch, and that people are really enjoying the Switch, and games like ARMS are doing really well, and they're actually going to be, you know, like on the pro fighting game circuit, and that actually makes me very interested in a Switch. Prior to E3, I didn't really know, you know, if it would ever be something that I'd want to pick up, and now I'm feeling pretty good about perhaps wanting one in the future.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I think as far as who won hearts and minds, or like who maybe gained the most ground. During E3, I'm pretty sure that trailer for Odyssey is kind of like, it may not have been the best trailer, but I think in terms of like where people were before and where they were after, I think that trailer made the greatest gains.
That like meme going around about like, wait, was it Mario's hat this whole time that just like took over a plumber and has been forcing him to run around and do these things is like kind of incredible in a way. Like it really is this weird fantastical world. Like I watched that trailer. I think I wrote something to you guys, but it was like I felt like I was on drugs watching that trailer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is happening?
Yeah, and people that, you know, I did not get a chance to play it myself, obviously, but I did hear a couple podcasts of folks that did play Odyssey, and they just said it was just, you know, it kind of harkened back to good old Mario, but had some really nice new features and felt, you know, it felt very new and really creative. So I'm really excited about that.
That's awesome.
I still have my reservations about that hardware. Like I like it. I liked it as a form factor. Like when Scott and I played, it was pretty fun and easy to use really quickly. But like if it needs to justify its price for me, like it needs a little bit more meat on the bone. Like I know it's coming, I don't know if they announced it. I don't think they really did. But I think it's still just kind of quote unquote coming. But like I need like Netflix and or, you know, Hulu or
sure.
something, so that like that not only does it become my like travel game machine, but also I can just, you know, bring the little like a travel dock and throw it in there and watch Netflix when I'm in the hotel or whatever. Like,
right.
It has the capabilities of doing that little bit extra that would just make it a more worthwhile machine. And like versus, let's say, the new iPad that got announced, which feasibly could be like its own little computer on top of being a gaming thing and a streaming platform and everything else.
Yes.
So it's like, and I know that is significant. It's more, it's like $300, but when you add in like accessories and all this stuff, it's not that much more, honestly, at the end of the day. And it's just kind of like, you know, if I'm going to travel with a thing, I'm not going to travel with both. And that's my only holdup, because it's like, not my only, also just not wanting to spend $500 on it or whatever right now. But like,
right.
But like my holdup being that, it's so close to being like exactly what I want it to be. And it's just like, they're just barely missing it. And adding those games is like, that's, that's piquing my interest now. Whereas before I was like, oh, what an interesting conceptual thing. And then I'm probably not going to ever get it because I don't care about Zelda. And then it's like this cool Mario game and Metroid's coming. And, you know, like they're starting to put out their titles that we talked about them needing the whole time. And I'm like, oh, now you got my interest. But to get me to put that credit card down or whatever, it's really going to be that little bit extra. That just make it that thing that I want to carry around with me, you know, and not just another gaming console. So.
Yep. I'm right there with you. And, you know, we know now, we've been around long enough to know that all these hardware manufacturers will release, you know, second and sometimes third or fourth versions of their hardware. So,
For sure. Yeah.
You know, even later on down the line, even if you wait a year, you know, there could be a completely...
Well, it doesn't feel like Nintendo does that as much, though, do they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a Nintendo 3DS. There's a 3DS XL.
Oh, yeah.
There's a 2DS and a 2DS XL. Yeah. And
console-wise, they seem to stick with... They put out, you know, the Wii, and it's the Wii until it's the Wii U. Yeah, they never did, like, a Wii Slim or anything.
Wii U had the kind of, like, the basic... in deluxe versions of the console, which I think differed, like one was white, one was black. I think the black one had more onboard memory or something. So, I don't know. You know, that stuff is coming. It just depends on if you want it or not. Really quickly, I'll just say for the listeners, we're going to talk about, what's going on with the Han Solo movie, the SNES classic. Ash saw the movie Resident Evil Vendetta. And then you guys are going to talk a little bit about the new Netflix show Glow, which I can't wait to hear about. So that's what we're doing on the show. And then of course we will, I don't think we've done a regular episode in a while. So I think, we'll do a little bit of catching up too. Seems appropriate at this juncture to do that.
Let's do it.
I feel like we all kind of get together for a while and then like an event occurs or there's a special episode that we need to have. And then if it's like, we kind of like fall off the wagon, like we don't
scatter to the wind.
Yeah we haven't really been doing a series of regular episodes back to back, and maybe that's a good thing because, you know, things are happening, we're interviewing people, you know, going to conventions here and there, so that's all.
Yeah, there's a lot coming up. This month's gonna be pretty crazy. You know, Matt and I'll be up at San Diego Comic-Con, so we plan on doing a lot of content out there too, and there might even be a couple interviews before we go, so
we're going to do one that's just 10 minutes of you and I making fart sounds.
Yeah, I think that would probably be a hit episode.
The upstairs of our hotel patio or whatever that place was that we recorded last year.
Yeah, I can't wait to go back there. I'm actually really stoked about that hotel and that room. I'm like, oh, it's going to be like going back home.
I wonder if that was one of those recordings in which, like, as I was editing it, I had to keep talking to you guys about all the room noise, like as I was editing.
It was, yeah. You know, it was exactly the spot you're talking about. Yeah. That's why we actually ended up moving our recording spot near the end there.
That's good. I mean,
just for you, man. Well, just for you.
Not just for me, but for the listeners too. I'm sure everybody can appreciate that.
Yeah.
I have an anecdote that I would like to share with you guys, and Ash already knows where this is going because he's seen it.
Okay.
But
so it's just for me.
Well, I know there's a point to my story. You gotta bear with me for a second because there's a punchline here. But you know, it's no secret that I like the show Roundhouse, the Nickelodeon show from like 1992, right?
Yeah.
So that show is 25 years old now at this point, right?
It's unbelievable.
Which is crazy. And so lately I've kind of been on this bender to find episodes of this show because they don't exist. And, you know, because it's owned by Viacom, it's like impossible to find everywhere because they're really good about taking that stuff down when it shows up on places like YouTube, you know? So I have been checking YouTube, and I kind of decided to really kind of like get into this hobby of finding this stuff. And so I came across, basically the lead, singer actress from season one. And, I wasn't really like looking for her specifically, but I happened upon her Instagram account and I found that she posted something on social media about like, hey, you know, the show's 25 years old. She, you know, happened to meet up with another cast member from that show, I guess who she's still friends with, and posted a photo. And I kind of just like wrote something. I was like, hey, you know, like I really like that show, you know, thanks a lot. Meant a lot to me as a kid. And, she liked my comment, which kind of like
Nice.
Made my inner child like super, super pleased with that, right? And this person that I'm referring to is Crystal Lewis. And I don't, do you guys know who Crystal Lewis is?
She's a singer, right?
Yeah, actually, that's, that,
I, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the she's weird, like, that's the weird thing yeah. about that is that this, her in particular, she went on to become this like Grammy nominated, like singer, like she's a Christian singer, songwriter, you know, recording yeah, artist yeah. kind of person. And she's got like, you know, she's been around obviously for like over 25 years, got like 20,000 followers on social media. So it's like to say something like that to somebody 25 years later and have that person acknowledge it, you know, as far as she's come and everything is like a big deal to me. And
it's a huge deal. And I don't want to discount, you know, what you're saying. Cause like someone might be listening and be like, oh, all it was a like on social media. But what that means is that the person took the time to read your comment and kind of send a little message through cyberspace that like, hey, thank you. You know, that's what that is.
Yeah.
It's a thank you.
Yeah.
And even though it just took a second out of their day, it is meaningful. You know, it is definitely meaningful.
And I don't, you know, anyone that's listened to the show knows that I don't tend to, fan out a lot over the, you know, over the people that we talk to and the things that we've done. But, this was like an occasion in which I could not really contain my excitement for this. And, you know, now that I'm older, I'm like really itching to kind of like watch the show again, because it's just like, you know, first of all, whether you like the show or not, the people on the show are undeniably talented. Like people, you know, people on that show could sing, they could dance, they could act, they were funny. You know, it was like right. this whole like variety show with people that were like way more talented than what you would expect from like Saturday Night Nickelodeon. And the band was like, the guys in the band like were playing like funk music and they dressed like they were on 120 minutes. You know what I mean? And that's yeah. kind of like nothing about that show made sense for what it was at the time. And I think that's why it kind of stood out to me. But I just want to quickly close the loop for you, Ash, as I was doing internet searches for these videos. Are you aware that like Katy Perry has been posting videos to get ready, I guess, for an upcoming tour and to like help promote her new album?
Yeah, I saw she like did like a reality, like basically like she lived in her house for like a couple weeks and let cameras be on the whole time, and like all this weird stuff started happening to her.
Yeah, so she's been posting these videos where like people come and like wake her up in the morning, like different, like one time it was like Left Shark came and like woke her up in the morning, was like dancing in her bedroom and stuff like that. She did another video in which just like a gospel choir showed up who I guess like sang on her album, right? And if you can find the video, because it's like less than a week old. And so she's singing, they're singing, they wake her up. All of a sudden, like someone appears in the crowd, Katy Perry like breaks down and starts crying. That person is Crystal Lewis, who's in, nice. Who kind of like makes a cameo in the gospel choir. And, you know, to close the loop, like Katy Perry says to her, like, you were the person I looked to growing up when I was learning how to sing. Like, she's like, you are my Madonna. And it's just kind of weird to awesome. Think that like, you know, it's just weird, like how all of these things are connected. And it's like, you know, just a simple show on, you know, she was only on the show for one season. Right. And it's like,
right.
All of a sudden, you know, you find out that like she touches people in interesting ways. It's like, you don't really expect like, well, I mean, I think people know that Katy Perry is sort of like, you know, came out of a religious background, so it's not too surprising. But I just thought it was interesting right. to see, like, after 25 years, like, the internet kind of, like, anything is available to you on the internet now, including stuff like that. So I just thought that was really interesting, and I wanted to share that anecdote.
No, it is cool. It actually segues pretty funny into, I wasn't going to bring it up yet, because I don't know if it's going to happen yet, but it's a total parallel to your story. I'm starting to get emails for San Diego Comic-Con about like, you know, interviews and different events going on and stuff like that. And I got one last night that was like, hey, like we're setting up interviews with Melissa Joan Hart, for what? Our listeners that no. are old, like me,
get the hell out of here.
Talking about Clarissa Explains It All and Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And when I was a little kid, I had like the biggest crush humanly possible on Clarissa from Clarissa Explains It All, or Melissa Joan Hart. I even remember going to Nickelodeon Studios with my family as a little kid and like seeing the sets from Clarissa and seeing like the costumes and all that stuff and being like, if I could just meet her. So I get this email instantly right back like, fuck yeah. fuck yeah, I want to interview her. That was what I wrote, just exactly that.
Wow.
And I told my wife, I'm like, you know, if I get to interview her, I'm going to leave you for her. And she's like, really? For Melissa Joan Hart? Then we got into this whole conversation who we would leave each other for. And it was, mine was basically just like actors from the 80s, and hers was like every Avenger, you know. So
I think absolutely, like that was part of the SNCC lineup. It was like Clarissa, Roundhouse, Are You Afraid of the Dark, and then something else. Maybe it was like All That at one time. But yeah, maybe we should just do it like a SNCC themed episode. Like, I don't even know what we would talk to Crystal Lewis about at this point, but like if you ever wanted to hear me lose my mind talking to somebody on the show, it'd probably be her. You know, obviously we've heard Ash.
Careful what you wish for, man.
I'm just saying, we've heard Ash kind of like fanboy out over, you know, various people that we've had on the show, and
almost every guest I freak out every time.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't help myself.
I think that might be my breaking point, is to like have somebody from a show that was like really influential to me as a child growing up,
right,
to then just be like hey, like you made a difference in my life. And like, she is undeniable. Her voice is incredible. Whether you listen to Christian music or not, she has a really awesome Christmas album as well that she put out like in 2000 or something. It's like a jazz album that she sings on. It's incredible. So yeah, I mean, having Melissa Joan Hart on, that would be amazing. Just the fact that like she would be willing to talk about the show, I mean, I guess you'd have to, right? Because it's like what you owe some of your success to. So
I mean that's the crazy wonderful thing about, like, you know, about doing this show for so long, is we, you know, even though we have these little opportunities that pop up every once in a while to kind of, you know, live these childhood fantasies and meet people that we've always wanted to meet. It's just kind of insane, you know?
I mean, it's weird, right? Cause we're all adults now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
When she was on the show, like, how old was she? Melissa Joan Hart. She's probably what, like 18.
She had to be like, not even, I want to say when she was first doing Clarissa, she was probably 15 or 16.
Yeah. So exactly. And I think, you know, a lot of the people on Roundhouse were like in their early 20s, you know, and now we're all, and like, I was probably like 11 or 12 and now we're all adults. It's just like, it's a weird thing, you know, to think that's like 20. Yeah. She was probably like in her late teens, like, cause she's 41 right now, but it's like, now you could speak to this person as an adult and be like, hey, this thing you did like 25 years ago, like, it was incredible. And to them, you know, maybe it was just a job. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really cool.
Yeah. But it's just a weird thing. But, that would be amazing. I hope you, I hope,
well, now
you
get our listeners know about our love of video games, pop culture, and 1980s children's television.
Well, I mean, we grew up in the 90s, right? Like, it's like,
yeah.
I think a lot of our other listeners will, you know, some of our listeners I'm sure can relate to certain things, like how awesome certain things were in the 90s, like 120 minutes and SNCC, you know.
There really wasn't the internet until really 94. And then there wasn't really like streaming video until 98, 99.
Oh yeah.
So even like, then it was so rudimentary. In
right. So, like, I mean, like, you know, the things that we watched as like in middle school and stuff like that was, we would just watch it over and over again. We'd like, you know, record crap on VHS and just loop it.
Oh yeah. That's
because there wasn't any other option.
That's the thing, is like, if you find something on YouTube from like pre 1995, like, that exists today, it's because someone put a VC, you know, put a tape in their VCR and recorded it, right? Held on to the tape as long as they could, and then finally digitized it and put it on YouTube. And it's just amazing that we're living in this era where now you can, like, some of these things are discoverable again. And now we're old enough to like do something about it, right? That we can go like, hey, we want to talk to you, or like, hey, I really like that thing you did back in the day, which is kind of amazing. I also discovered that, like, apparently Nickelodeon, they had a brand called Nick Splat, which is an unfortunate name, but, at the last year at night, they were running like stuff from the 90s, including stuff from SNCC, Ren and Stimpy, you know, Doug, Rugrats, all that stuff that like we grew up on. And so I think I missed out like on a whole HD broadcast of Roundhouse like a year ago, which is too bad, but.
Oh man.
I mean. That means that it's probably sitting on someone's DVR, and it does exist, and I will find it. So
you will, you'll find it.
Rant over. Let's get somebody from that show on our show. And so I can lose my mind for like an episode. That would be fun.
We can do it, man.
Yeah. All right. Anyways, let's move on. Let's talk about something.
I'll just covert go get a job at Viacom and I'll sneak out the tapes for you.
Get the tapes. I know they exist and it's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, for sure they exist.
But I mean, it's ridiculous that you can find like so many of these other things are being released now. You know, like you can find like Beavis and Butthead. I think like The State was re-released at one time.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, Viacom is like notorious with their digital rights and streaming and stuff. They're the toughest to put stuff out with.
So. Exactly. And I mean, like, come on. I would just, even if it was on TV, I would watch an episode of Double Dare every once in a while just for fun.
Like, if Viacom was like, hey, we're going to put up a channel and it's just going to run all of the 120 minutes from like 1991 till 2000, I would just sit. It would just be all I watch. I would just watch 120 minutes forever.
It's funny that you said that. I was legitimately thinking last week how I would just love a channel that played television from that era with all the commercials from that era just in real time. Mm-hmm. Just in real time. Like all the old commercials, just everything. Like horrible aspect ratio, you know, horrible presentation. I'd be like, oh man, it would just be so nostalgic and like kind of warm and fuzzy, you know?
Yeah.
Does anyone remember USA Up All Night?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
I remember that it was like middle school. Like you get so excited when you saw like a bra or something, you know, it was the absolute best.
It was always like Roger Corman movies and like just so the weirdest, bad. Like, but edited too, like edited Roger Corman movies.
Yeah. Which is... Yeah. I was just like, oh my God, like there's just no market for something that terrible anymore. You know, like, good times.
You gotta strike while the iron's hot though. I mean like that our generation. Yeah. We're at the age now where like, everybody is cashing in on nostalgia, I feel like, except for Viacom, right? Like they have all this stuff that they're just sitting on. Like there's somewhere out there on YouTube, or at least it used to be, there was a video of Hum playing If You Prefer an Astronaut on 120 Minutes in the audio quality.
It gets pulled down like every 6 months. It's the worst audio quality ever created.
Yeah, but it's still, there's, you can tell they're so loud and they're so amazing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and I mean like the way that
there's
dressed.
Sunny Day Real Estate one that gets pulled down all the time too. Like,
I didn't see people
get their 120 minute stuff up, and I find it and I watch it endlessly, and then Viacom yanks it like soon after.
But why? Why? I just don't get it. Like if you're gonna take it down, like sell it to us. I'll buy it. You know what I mean? Like I will buy it.
Usually the mindset, right? That there's some 120 minutes box set floating around out there, but there's not. Like it's not a thing.
Oh yeah, I mean there's no like. There's no box set of Roundhouse. There's no, I don't know if you can, I mean, I'm sure you can find episodes of Clarissa somewhere. I don't know that there's maybe. Like a set somewhere, but, it's overdue, man. It's way overdue. They could at least create like an app and charge whatever they want, you know, $10 a month or something. Like they have so much stuff. It's just ridiculous. It kills me.
I wonder, I do wonder if the 120 minutes, like my dream world where they just stream 120 minutes, 24 hours a day, is a music rights issue if they don't actually have the rights to replay those videos forever.
Maybe it is.
In perpetuity.
Maybe it is. And it's, you know, it's one of those problems too where it's like if you don't defend your copyright, then you lose it, right? So if they don't go out and issue takedown notices for that content, then they'll lose it altogether. But again, the argument is like, just let me buy it. I want it.
Yeah.
You know, like you're killing me.
So agreed.
Anyways.
The 90s were great, you guys.
Oh, nostalgia.
90s were great.
I watched a bunch of...
I was going to say, do you guys want to...
That was the first time we've done that in the same time.
I know. I was going to say, do you guys want to talk about what we've been up to since we haven't spoken in 10 years?
Well, I mean, that was kind of it for me. Like, the Roundhouse thing kind of... That made my week at this point, so I'm good. But,
good.
I mean, I'm just playing Mass Effect. I'm finishing that game, and that's it. So, like, I want to hear
about...
Did
you 100% it? Is that what I saw?
I'm almost there. I'm working on it. I gotta
you screenshot something and it said 100% on it. Did Scott 100% it?
I'm close, but there's a rare achievement in the game for completing 20 like alien Sudoku puzzles in the game, and I think throughout the entire game there's only 22. So I think it's a hard achievement to get if you're not looking for it. So it's like on Xbox, it's got like. Less than 0.6
what
completion.
What sane person is not looking for the alien Sudoku puzzles? Those are like the best part of the game.
I know, right? I mean, I totally agree with you.
For Sudoku fans out there, it absolutely is.
I totally agree with you. So I sought them out and got that achievement. But that's what I posted earlier in the week. And so I'm quickly closing in on the end of the game. But it's kind of like if the original Mass Effect trilogy was a movie, like this kind of feels more like a TV show based on the movie. just because of the just because of the kind of the pacing of it, you know, like I feel like I'm going back and forth between all the different planets constantly, because it's like you clear a planet and all of a sudden they're like, oh hey, there's something on Kadara that you need to go back and do, and you're like, really? Yeah. I was just
on. And here's a filler episode where the main character gets really drunk and turns into a caveman.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's like a Stargate almost.
Yeah.
But you know, like again, we've beat this to death, but there are like really super brilliant moments in the game, which kind of like to me give it that TV feel where it's like, oh, there's an episode where you and Drac go to a bar and beat up a bunch of people, and then you just kind of move on to something else, right? And that's kind of what makes the pacing of the game a little weird. But that's pretty much it for me. How about you guys?
Well, okay, so I am just getting better. Our listeners can probably tell I sound a little stuffy. My kid contracted some sort of creepy lung disease, and I have inherited it. So we've had a nice mucusy week around my house. That being said, I did watch all of Glow, which, you know, when you're sick, it's kind of like it gives you an excuse to be extra lazy. So I got to sit down and watch all of Glow, which we'll talk about, I guess, in the review section. Still playing Overwatch, got to play with a couple pals. I played with some old students of mine, which is always cool. And then I played with old contributor Jessie Lamb, who's really, really good.
Yeah,
she's really good, like insane good. And yeah, so it's been fun. Still playing Overwatch. It's, you know, still a blast. Been waiting for some big content to drop, and they're kind of like dragging me along, like waiting. It's supposed to be a new hero coming out soon, so I'm super stoked about that.
Who's Jessie play as?
She is a Zenyatta main.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, she's really good with Zen.
It's awesome.
So, yeah, really, really good. What else? So I did check out, I'm not going to review it because I'm only, you know, an hour, 2 hours into it, but the Valkyria Revolution, which is a sequel, non-sequel to one of my favorite games, Valkyria Chronicles. Mm-hmm. It's published by Sega, and it just came out actually today. And played a little bit of that, and not really to the point where I can give like an accurate review of any sort. But you know, it's cool to return to the world. I really think that the fantasy mixed with like Steam technology is cool. I'll just say this: if you've never played Valkyria Chronicles, it's available now on Steam, and it's pretty damn cheap. And it's some of the best, you know, strategy if you're into, you know, XCOM style strategy.
Cool.
Out there. It's a great story, beautiful visuals. You know, it. The unfortunate thing about Revolution is that it's not a strategy game anymore, a turn-based strategy game. It's more of like an action title, sort of something similar to something like Dynasty Warriors. So, you know, it's different. They kind of went a different route this time. So
I would be curious to know why they changed the format of the game entirely.
I don't know. It's weird. A lot of people were really upset because after Chronicles came out, it was PlayStation exclusive, and it didn't do well in the States. It did pretty well in Japan, and then they decided to move it over to be a PSP title. And so they came out with, I think, two sequels for PSP. But it was such a visually stunning game that it just didn't lend itself very well to handheld. So it was hard. It was hard to kind of get into it. And now I don't know why they did this. So, Matt, what about you?
Hi. I'm not eating dumplings right now. just to clarify in case the audience.
Yeah, fair enough. Wondering. Fair enough.
Let's see. I was sick also, and we watched a bunch of movies. I watched Arrival.
Oh man.
Which, have you guys watched that yet?
Yeah, I did. I watched it on a plane.
It's really good.
Yeah, like, man.
Surprisingly very, very good.
It's one of those like based on a book movies. But I think
it's a short story though, right? Like, it's
okay. I didn't know that, but it holds up really well, I think, for film, the conversion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you watched it, Ash, but I don't want to give anything away. But it's, just a really great take on a couple of tropes that I think have been done, not to death, but sort of to death in recent sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And, just handled so differently and so well. And I knew it was up for a bunch of nominations and everything. And I think did anything win? Something might've won there too. I don't remember.
I don't know. But, it made me feel things though.
Yeah. Just a beautiful story and a really great movie. And just kind of like overall, just great. I just really walked away thinking, man, what a cool, what a good movie. You know? Yeah.
I'm an Amy Adams fan. I think she's great. Yeah. I've probably seen Night at the Museum 2 more than any other film on earth for various reasons. And she was just phenomenal in that. Never got old.
Can I make a confession?
What?
I really like the movie Enchanted with her.
Which one is that?
I've never seen it. That's where the cartoons come to life.
That's kind of like the pre Once Upon a Time movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where she
I haven't seen that either.
The cartoon princess Amy Adams kind of like falls through a well and then comes out of a sewer in New York, and then she meets up with Patrick Dempsey, and then, you know, shenanigans ensue. But you know, she sang's good.
Yeah. I believe it. She's a good actress. She's never really, like, I don't dislike her or like her in any particular way. I just, the movie was like, yeah, I don't know. So, but it was really good. So really enjoyed that. We watched the last Resident Evil movie, not Vendetta, but the final chapter or whatever. Look, man, it's totally worth it on a TV when you're sick. Like, it's a perfect, I'm laying here on the couch eating, you know, soup.
I wouldn't saw it in the theater, man. I know what's going on.
Yeah, it was great. I loved it. I love those movies. They're perfectly bad for me. Like, I enjoy them.
And they're rebooting.
Like, they know what they are, and they don't try to be anything but what they are, you know?
Right.
We watched 22 Jump Street.
I don't think I've seen it. Maybe I don't know.
You didn't watch the second one? Oh, watch the second one. What a dumb, fun series. Did you ever watch 21 Jump Street?
Yeah, the first one's great.
I did not see the first one.
You would love it, honestly. Like, they're just so slapsticky, funny, like, comedies. They're very, like, base level, stupid, fun comedies. But 22 Jump Street is great. The start of it is, like, wonderful. They make fun of 21 Jump Street. They make fun of sequels, like, right away, and then they continue to rag on themselves throughout the whole movie. It's done really well. And then at the end, they do all the rest of the sequels, like, all the way to, like, 29 or 34 Jump Street or something. Like, they just keep going, and they do, like, teases for all these other Jump Streets, and it's just ridiculous and funny. Yes, we did that. Watch Glow. It feels weird. Do I talk about the article? It feels weird. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, you should talk about it. You should. It's really cool. Do it.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
I'll talk about my little slash film thing. Why not?
Sure. So in other site news, a weird thing happened this weekend where I submitted a satirical article called 11 Reasons Why I, a White Man, Am Not Privileged. I submitted it to McSweeney's, which is a satirical website. If you've never gone to it, they post it's very prosy satire. It's very there's articles, you'd have to see it, but there's just a bunch of different kinds of satirical articles. And it kind of exploded in the craziest way, and is getting shared like nuts still right now. Last number I saw was I don't know any actual statistics on it, but it's got something like 120,000 shares on Facebook.
Well, I can tell you, if you go to the website right now, you're the top trending article on the site.
Yeah, yeah.
So while I am disappointed that you did not post it to our site,
I don't know that it would have had the same impact coming.
Probably
up
not.
No,
it would have had like three shares.
Yeah, no. No, that's
we
awesome.
Would have gotten trolled by GG.
Yeah. So it's crazy. So I want your guys' opinion on this, because I have been absolutely lurking in all the comments and tweet threads that it's on, and I have gotten very little traction of my own in any way in this. Like, I picked up some Twitter followers or whatever, but beyond, I got one weird email, but beyond that, nothing really. It's very shielded because it's a McSweeney's piece, kind of, because I'm linked. Like, you can get to my email and my Twitter from the article, but you have to kind of click in and you'd have to be looking for it, you know? So I've been lurking in the Twitter feeds and the Facebook. Like, it's weird if I like somebody's post about my post, right? Like, if I'm lurking there, that's weird, right?
I think so. Possibly.
Ash, you're good at social media.
I would say, don't worry about it. I would say if you if you like the person that is liking your thing, let them know that you like the thing. I don't think there's any harm in that. If the person seems to be a toolbox, then I wouldn't bother letting them know that you're there.
Here's the thing I'm proud about with this article the most, is that I apparently wrote it well enough that the toolboxes have appeared to have very little response to it, even because it's been dropped. Like, so my favorite thing that's happened with it at all is, and I've seen this happen a few times on Twitter, is there'll be this huge like 20 thread comment about white male privilege or white privilege and all these people talking about it. And there's a troll like somewhere in the middle going like, it doesn't exist because of blah, 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 like, you know, whatever dumb, stupid defense that comes out of that argument all the time. And the final post in the thread will just be somebody be like, here, just read this and move along. And we'll drop the link to my McSweeney's thing. And then the conversation will end. It's like a mic drop. It's like a literal mic drop in a white privilege conversation.
Well, I think the thing that's good about the article is if you're unaware of, you know, some of the issues going on with white privilege, it's a good way of opening people's eyes without being disrespectful to really anyone. It's like, it's just informative and smart. And so when people read it, they may not realize that they have it better than someone else until they look and understand that other people are perhaps going through some things that you as a white dude don't have to go through.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the notion of privilege, is that like you aren't aware of it generally. It's not a thing you're taking advantage of. It's a thing that you get advantage of just by existing, essentially. And the problem is that like the argument that always gets made back at this article that I've seen and that got emailed to me in some very mansplainy way, which was fantastic, that is like, well, poor white people have it really bad. And I'm like, well, yeah, they do. Like, that's not the point of the article, nor is that what we're talking about. Poor white people definitely have it bad. They're disadvantaged. We have a serious poverty issue in this country. And like, that's not what this is about. This is about the fact that, like, you know, I mean, the points are in the air. We won't have to go over it. But anyways, it's been very surreal. It's weird to go like, quote unquote, weirdly viral, I guess. I don't know what that means, but like just seeing it shared a bunch and being completely out of control of it is crazy. It's very crazy to feel and watch.
Well, like, I mean, honestly, hopefully you leverage it into writing more pieces like that, because it seems like it resonated with a lot of people, or else it wouldn't have been shared.
Well, I mean,
so hopefully
there's definitely, you know, no pressure, you know.
Well, let me tell you about my article for Slash Film and how little it resonated with them. No, that's really cool. I mean, really quickly, just to spend like 1 minute on it. I had just put my kid down for a nap. I saw Peter from Slash Film put a post up that he was looking for people to write articles about their favorite movie vehicles. And I wrote a little piece about the truck from Maximum Overdrive and how it scared the shit out of me as a kid. And it got put up on Slash Film. Thanks, man. Which was, you know, Slash Film is one of my favorite movie sites. And so it was cool to see something, a little tiny piece I wrote up on Slash Film. And people seemed to like that, too. I had met Peter like a couple months prior to posting this. I don't know if he put it up just because he remembered me, but
I met him at Comic-Con 1 year, and he was the nicest dude when I met him.
He's really nice. I actually sat next to him at Celebration for some panel or something like that. Oh, the Star Wars Rebels premiere. I ended up sitting next to him, which was kind of cool. But it's neat when you get to write something that people like, you know. And we used to write stuff all the time for our own site, and we kind of stopped doing it because it's hard to generate content all the time. You have to really want to write about things, and we got to the point where we were just kind of barfing out press releases, and that is just the worst thing. Like, I pity people that do that for a living, because it's
not fun.
Nightmare fuel. Yeah. So maybe now that we like writing, we'll start writing again.
Would this make an interesting article for your website?
We'll run it on Nerd. Oh, go ahead. What was that?
Sorry. I was gonna say, would this make an interesting article for your website?
Like, oh, I know. I get those all the time. Yeah, I got one today.
Yeah, I did too.
I was like, event? Well. I mean, it happens a lot, but I'm just kind of like, I don't know. Let me think about it for myself and get there.
I have this random idea to like, and I could do it on Nerd Appropriate very easily, but I feel like I control that site. to post like rejected pieces, like things that, because I actually have submitted 4 things to McSweeney's. 3 they rejected. Weirdly, this was the first thing I submitted and they accepted it right away. And I was like, that's weird. Mm-hmm. And now that it's done what it's done, it's mildly intimidating to figure out what the next thing is. But
you just gotta constantly reinvent yourself, man.
Yeah, I just have to immediately become a famous satirist, right? That's just that's what has to happen, essentially.
Exactly.
Isn't that a guy with goat legs with a little flute?
Yeah, I just have to do that. I just have to grow goat legs and carry a flute.
But I want to be a satirist too.
But maybe this is something that you were born to do. Maybe it's something that's already inside of you.
I did like after it was up. So I of course like started Thursday, Friday when it was up during the week. I was kind of like half watching it. I'm crazy busy at work, so I couldn't really pay too much attention to it. And I think I sent you guys something or somebody, and I was like, "This is crazy," because it hit like 30,000 shares on Friday. And I was like, well, this is crazy, but whatever, you know. And then Saturday, at its height, it was getting shared something like 2,000 to 3,000 times an hour. And I was like freaking out over that inside and really trying to hold it together at the same time on the outside. Like I was like,
yeah,
everything's
real.
Fine. I don't have writing that is just people are reading all over the world right now. I'm okay. I looked at Melissa and I was like, I'm not going to freak out till it hits 100,000, because I didn't think that was a reachable number. I thought that I just kept thinking, because we post stuff, we've done this stuff, we've put up podcasts that do very well, and they peak, and then they just kind of like, they don't like slowly tail off. They just kind of nosedive usually. Like it's like,
yep, yeah.
You hit the rush, and then it just kind of, it is gone all of a sudden.
Right.
And then it kept getting shared Sunday, and it's tailed off some, but it's still getting shared today. And I just was like, okay, whatever. And I said to Melissa, like, maybe this is like my comedic voice. Like maybe I do satire well. And she just stared at me and I was like, what? And she was like, you're the most sarcastic person I've ever met.
Yeah, man. Like you would get in trouble.
She was like, that's literally how you tell people when they're wrong about something. And I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
like that is satire.
That's what constantly got you in trouble in geography class in middle school.
Yeah.
Is
yes.
And got you sent to the back of the room all the time.
Can I tell that story? It's my favorite class that I ever got in trouble in.
Yeah,
I got
please in trouble do. In a lot of classes I remember that vividly, but please do.
Scott and I took a social studies class together that was this bizarre thing in middle school in eighth grade where they put two classes together and had two teachers teach it. And it was the two teachers that we had in sixth and seventh grade,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is weird. It's a weird thing to do, but it's the way that our middle school decided to do it. Well, fun fact, both those teachers despised me like more than any other teacher
unfairly
I've ever
so.
Had. What's that?
Unfairly so.
Yeah. I mean, they just like, granted, I was probably a little shit in sixth and seventh grade, but like in eighth grade, I really actually wasn't that bad. I talked and made jokes and stuff, but I wasn't like a terrible kid or anything. And they just were already ready to not deal with my shit. And as you're probably well aware of, Ash, that feeling. And they would get mad when anything happened around me at me. Like people talked, people passed the note or something. It was Matt. Like it was just immediately me. And no matter if I had anything to do with it or not,
you'd be like the person that got caught with the note in your hand, like passing. Yeah.
And then they would yell at me and I was like, this isn't my note. I just like, I'm in the middle of two, I'm paying attention. And they'd be like, sure, Matt, blah, blah, blah. And they get real mad at me. And I was like, I don't know what to do. So they started coming up with like weird ways to punish me. And they would just move me essentially. But then wherever they moved me in class, like somebody would talk to me or whatever would happen. And then they would get mad and they'd move me again. And by like the fifth move, and that's not an exaggeration, they literally moved me every couple of weeks. They moved me back to the back of the class in a desk right next to one of the teachers, Mrs. Jacobson.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there and I just smiled at her all day.
Oh.
I knew it would weird her out. Like I knew in my head, I was like, well, this will fix this problem. So I just smiled at her and she'd be like, stop smiling at me. And I was like, I'm just smiling. And she goes, stop smiling at me. And I was like, I'm just smiling. Nothing's happening here. I'm just smiling. And then she got mad at that after like a day or two of me doing that. And she moved me. Then they moved me to like this walled off, like private desk. And then they accused me of cheating. And I was like, I am not doing anything. Like the whole time, I swear to God, other than the smiling, I really wasn't doing anything. They accused me of cheating. So then they moved me back out. And then eventually they just put me back in the middle of the class and like gave up entirely, I guess.
Wow.
And then that's the same class that they would do field trips. And Scott and I figured out that if we didn't go on the field trip, mm-hmm. the two of us could just hang out and play werewolf, the old werewolf
card game. Yeah. We just do whatever we want
together.
It was a free day.
Yeah, it was a free day. Yeah, so we would like not go do field trips on purpose, and the whole class would be like, what? And I think a couple people started figuring it out and then trying to stay with us while we were just hanging out in an empty classroom together.
Smart.
We were terrible.
We were ahead of our time.
Sure were. Anyways, other than that, this is actually pretty cool. Sorry, I don't mean to drag this on super long. Melissa and I went to a thing called DCM, which is the Del Close Marathon this weekend.
What is that?
And the Del, it is UCB's improv marathon for 3 days.
Oh, cool.
They do wall-to-wall 24-hour improv at five places in the city. So it is running from the start of Friday till the end of Sunday night.
How many people does it take to do that in one place?
I mean, it's worldwide known. So teams fly in from all over the place.
Oh.
And like the full original UCB team, like Amy Poehler, Ian Roberts, Matt Walsh, and Matt Besser were all here. They did a show together. It's like, it's giant. It's a humongous thing.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So we bought passes and we went around and did a bunch of stuff. But the coolest thing we did, we actually got a ticket for, and I think I've talked about it on this podcast before. It's called Gravid Water, which is, a stage-trained actor with a very good improv actor go out, and the stage-trained actor has one side of a scene from a play, and they're not allowed to break from character. They're not allowed to break from the lines. They can't improv at all. And then the improv actor doesn't know the play and doesn't know what play they're doing and just improvs, and basically you see what happens, sort of.
It's brilliant.
And what generally happens is like magic. It's incredible to watch, because it's this, like, when it'll like Brian Stack, who's a Conan guy who did it. And he a good example is he played this like weird, creepy old guy that was holding an old beach bucket on that they had on stage. And the woman across from him was like, why do you have that in your hands? And he was like, I was just making sandcastles. And she was like, that's my little brother's bucket. You stole it from him. And she's like, put it down. So he puts it down. And then like a couple minutes later, without her saying anything, he picks the bucket back up. And the next line she had was, put that the fuck back down. it just happened to be the next line she had. And he had no idea that's, and the crowd just like erupted, and he put the bucket back down and everybody's laughing. It was just very funny and really cool. But Gravid Water, if you're ever in like New York or LA, I think is where they do it. It's incredible. It's really awesome.
That's awesome.
So we did a ton of improv. We saw a bunch of weird shows and good shows and terrible shows, and it's just like really cool festival and neat thing to do. So we did that too. It was fun.
Sweet.
Good times.
Well, now we are caught up.
We're all caught up with each other.
All right.
News.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, what's up?
What do you call it when you only yawn once?
I don't know. What do you call it?
A yawn solo.
Oh,
that feels like an Alexa Star Wars joke. I'm not.
That really
lie.
Does.
It does
really
feel
does.
Like an Alexa Star Wars joke.
You should probably sell that to Amazon.
Oh, call them. I'm sure they pay.
So I'm starting to think that this movie does not need to be made.
You've said that several times, and I
privately
feel it. We agree with you.
I'm saying
it's getting made. So, you know, we're going to have to watch. But anyway, we're talking about the Han Solo problems that have been exploding all over the internet. And there have been a lot of revelations in this story, especially in this past week. We all know Scott doesn't really want this movie to happen. But what about you, Matt? How do you feel about a Han Solo origin story?
I don't care. Like, I don't really care about it as a story in the movie verse of Star Wars.
Right.
So like my hesitation with all the news that's coming out is that it's starting to feel very Iron Fist-ish in news, and that is worrisome to me somewhat.
Right. Right. I can see that. I mean, for our listeners that have not paid attention to the internet, because it's virtually everywhere, the directors Phil Lord and Chris Miller have been fired by Disney and Kathleen Kennedy, and they have been replaced by Ron Howard.
Which, I mean, you could get worse replacements, you know.
Right. I mean, Ron Howard is pretty awesome. You know, I put a couple notes here of the movies of his that I loved. Apollo 13, Willow, Da Vinci Code.
Da Vinci Code was what made your list?
I like Da Vinci Code. I thought it was pretty good. I like Hanks. I'm a Hanks fan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Johnson Hanks 2020.
Yeah. And Splash. I mean, come on.
I mean, he's got like a crazy list of movies. I guess that's why I was saying Da Vinci Code made it.
Well, there are a lot of this is also one thing we can talk about with Ron Howard is he's never really done big sci-fi. Like Willow is probably his big genre film was Willow, which was at the time kind of loved and hated. Yeah. Which is why we didn't get, you know, Willow 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But I don't know if he is the best for a big giant sci-fi movie. There's a lot of other directors that I could be like, oh wow, like that would be, you know, freaking Edgar Wright in there and I would crap all over myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, like, first of all, we know Edgar Wright wouldn't step into a halfway made movie and finish it. Probably.
Yes. No, he wouldn't.
But, you could say the same thing about a lot of the directors that Marvel's tapped, though, for big fantasy superhero movies.
Right.
Like they came kind of not out of that world and then gave a really interesting spin. Now, granted, you know, like the only like super established one was maybe Kenneth Branagh, right? And yes. Thor wasn't the shining example on a hill of movies that we want necessarily.
Right.
But,
right.
But I don't know. I mean, it could be. Maybe they just thought we just need a guy who's crazy experienced that can just get this thing made, you know, guide this through to the end. Like we need that kind of hand on it now.
Yeah. And
maybe
I think they're, you know, and this goes along with the rest of our news, but I think they're probably also looking for a director that can pull really good performances out of the actors.
Yes.
Which is, I think, you know, I think the crew themselves can probably get the shots, you know, get the shots that they need.
Right.
With all the, you know, with all the CG work and all that stuff. But I think they need a director's director that can really make these actors do the best that they possibly can. Because like one of the bits of news that we have just gotten is that Alden, how do you pronounce his last name? Alden Ehrenreich?
Ehrenreich?
Yeah.
Sure.
Who's playing Han Solo has been given an acting tutor from the studio.
Yeah.
Which is not a great sign. And that was after Kathleen Kennedy and the rest of the crew kind of reviewed a lot of the footage that Phil Lord and Chris Miller had filmed. And they didn't really like his delivery. And so they wanted to kind of refine his performance a bit and got him an acting coach, which is, you know, also a bad sign. But I don't know, man, all this doesn't bode well, but I don't think it's going to be disastrous in the end. I don't think they would let a disastrous film at this point come out of those studios.
You know, that's the refrain about all of these things, right? Like, well, Marvel won't put a bad Marvel movie out. They won't make a bad Netflix show. Like, and yet, you know, like it does seem possible is all I'm saying.
Right.
Maybe it won't be, you know, it's not going to be a total just disaster of a movie. That seems very unlikely, but it is very possible they put out a milquetoast story about Han
That's
Solo
true.
As
yeah.
a kid.
And I mean, do you think that like somebody at Disney Central was like looking at the analytics and going like, well, it would appear as if Han Solo is our, you know, best focus tested character in the Star Wars universe, so let's make a movie about him. And then somewhere along the way they forgot or confounded the popularity of Han Solo the character with the popularity of Harrison Ford the actor, and then thought if you separate the two, like, you would still get something out of it. And to put someone else in those shoes is probably not an easy thing to do, and will likely not live up to you know, the statue of a character like of an actor like Harrison Ford. I think that's hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when the actor is still, you know, is still living and just portrayed that character like last year. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I mean, it's very weird to jump back in time and be like, and here's me when I was the same age that I did the original Star Wars. It's like, oh, well, you know, I don't know. It's odd. It's just going to be different.
I think it's going to be very different. I don't know how you do that. You know, because like you said, the actor can go watch the movie and go like, oh, this is supposed to be me. That's interesting. I don't know. I don't have like a basis for that. It just seems very bizarre, though.
Right, right. And the other thing, last bit of info that we got about this is the editor has been replaced. So basically what they've been doing is they've been asking Phil Lord and Chris Miller to shoot lots and lots and lots of footage and lots of coverage. And they, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, like to improvise a lot, and they did it on the Lego Movie and Claudia the Chance of Meatballs, and they like actors to improvise and have fun. Well, Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Han Solo with his son, doesn't really like improvisational material. And so they had him do a ton of coverage, and apparently the editors were trying to piece together all this footage that these guys were shooting, and it just wasn't fitting together well. So the editor, Chris Dickens, who is the editor on like Slumdog Millionaire and Hot Fuzz and Seed of Chucky, was let go.
Movies you're choosing.
And they brought
in... guy's probably got like an Academy Award, and you're like, Seed of Chucky.
I had to pull Seed of Chucky. But the editor that they brought in is probably like... he's like the Spielberg of editing, is this guy Pietro Scalia. Yeah. He did like The Martian. He did the Spider-Man movies, Gladiator, Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah.
And so they brought this guy who's essentially just a workhorse that can make anything.
He's like
great,
Wolfman, you know? From That Thing You Do. They bring in the bassist.
Yeah. You got to bring in Wolfman. Yeah. Absolutely. By the way, Scott, segue, did you see that they reunited for one show?
Yeah. The O'Neaters.
The O'Neaters, yeah. Yeah. Sans Steve Zahn. He was not there, but
yeah, that's amazing. I did see
pretty
that.
Pretty awesome. But anyway, yeah. So I don't know. I'm still excited for Han Solo. Like, I'm with Scott that I think like there is a million different Star Wars stories that can be told. Yeah. I don't feel like this one needs to be told because we know Han's arc. Like, we know where he goes. We know his like his path from being like this roguish a-hole to being a bit of a hero, you know, in the end. And
do you think they're almost disappointed that they didn't wait to announce the movies they were going to put out until after like Rogue One came out? Because it's like Rogue One was kind of their test story on whether a movie with basically no lead, known lead, I guess, is known character
right,
lead.
Right.
Gets put out and they see how it does. And then it ends up being this just giant movie. Like, it feels like maybe if they hadn't already gone like Boba Fett and Han Solo, they could have been like, oh shit, we could just tell Star Wars stories. Like, yes. No one cares here.
That's what
we
want.
Can just do whatever we want.
Yes. We want you to give someone the keys and go drive, you know, like drive wherever you want, not to like, don't stay in the Han Solo lane and try to live up to something that is as well established as a character like that. Because it's going to be weird and people are going to have problems with it. Like, no matter how good this movie is, people are going to watch it and go like, oh, I don't think he would have said that in this instance, you know? So,
well, especially if his acting's not great, it's like everybody loves Harrison Ford as Han Solo. And then all of a sudden you have this new kid who, you know, I admittedly, I have not seen him act. So, I mean, I'm not going to judge his acting. I've never seen him act, but he doesn't have very many credits under his belt.
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of thing that happened to Finn Jones with Iron Fist. Like, Finn Jones, I don't think he's a terrible actor. He just hasn't acted all that much. He got plucked basically out of school straight into Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, he doesn't have very many scenes with dialogue. So he was essentially window dressing for a couple seasons. And then he gets the starring role where he has to talk a whole lot, you know, and he just doesn't have the chops of someone that's been in front of a camera for 10, 15 years.
Right.
So it's different, you know, and especially in a huge production, like something like Iron Fist and something like Han Solo, if you haven't acted a ton, even if you're a well-trained actor, and if you're acting in front of a green screen for the first time or, you know, doing things you've never had to do before, it might feel awkward for you, you know? And I think that's what a lot of these young actors that are kind of like, you are the one, like that, I think that happens to them, you know? I don't know.
No, I think
I would agree.
You're kind of like, you're taking a big chance, right? That's really what it boils down to, is that you're just kind of like, you see potential and you just kind of hope that it pans out. And I, you know, I do kind of like the idea of picking actors out of like relative obscurity, especially in the case of someone like Daisy Ridley, right? Who, basically just kind of hinged the whole thing on her, you know, ability to perform and grow throughout the series.
Right. Right.
But then, you know, she is her own character, right? She can define the character as she sees fit. And, this person does not have the luxury of doing that with Han Solo.
You know, and I would also venture to say that that Daisy Ridley probably wouldn't have done so well as Rey without J.J. Abrams being such a great director, especially with powerful females. Like, J.J. Abrams is just great at directing women. Mm-hmm. And, like, I really feel like that, you know, he did a great job bringing Rey out of Daisy Ridley. Daisy Ridley is a phenomenal actress, but I think a lot of that was also J.J. Abrams' direction, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep, fair enough.
Well, let's talk about this Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, I just slid this in because I completely forgot about it, and it's a thing going on right now, although I think it's a little rich for probably all of our blood. But I went to see Full Metal Jacket last night at Alamo here in New York. I completely blanked that I did this, and you're going to be even more amazed when I tell you the next part. And Matthew Modine was there.
No way!
He did a Q&A, and I got to meet him and shake his hand.
The Joker himself.
And they were promoting the fact that there is an auction on right now. If you go to paddle8.com and look for Full Metal Jacket, or just /auction/Full Metal Jacket, there's an auction of Matthew Modine's black and white photography that he did while he was on set for Full Metal Jacket. And all the proceeds are going, I think, to either the Purple Heart Foundation or Wounded Warrior. I don't remember which one they're going to. Purple Heart Foundation. But it's all for benefit. He also, the side note on that little bit of news, first of all, seeing Full Metal Jacket in the theater again was astounding. It's still
an incredible film. Yeah.
It's feasibly one of my favorite Kubrick films.
It's definitely mine, because it's like the least like psychedelic.
I mean, it's the most narrative of all of his stories, for sure. But it's so heavy, and it is such an honest telling of war and I mean, maybe not fully honest, but pretty honest, it feels like. And I don't know, of that era of war movies, other than maybe Apocalypse Now, like it just is the most astounding, I think, to watch again. But and also he has right now, this is just sort of a news item specifically for you, Ash, because I know you're a big fan as well as I am of Full Metal Jacket. There is an app that Matthew Modine made for the iPad only called the Full Metal Jacket Diary. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
It's a book he did like 2 years ago, and then they turned it into an iPad app, and it's this really awesome iPad app. It's on sale for $1.99 right now, and they donate to Wounded Warrior from proceeds from that.
Oh, that's great.
And it's all of his photography from the movie that he took, because he was carrying a camera around and taking photos the whole time. And it's also his diary. He kept a written diary of every day that he was on set, and it has all these details about the other actors and stories about him and Vincent D'Onofrio and Lee Ermey.
Arlie Ermey, I think.
Yeah, sorry. And it's narrated by him, so that you can actually listen to it. There's a whole like voiceover component of it, or you can just read it and go through the photos and stuff. It's a really great app. It's $1.99. It's just called Full Metal Jacket Diary. But since the proceeds also go to a good cause, I think it's a worthwhile thing. But I just thought I'd bring it up. There's an auction. The photos are very expensive, but I think they're one-time prints. They're like $2,000 though if you want to bid on them, but they goes to a good cause, and it's kind of awesome. If you were a Kubrick fan, and especially a Full Metal Jacket fan, you can even just go look at these photos, because they're gorgeous photos. So
heck yeah, that's awesome.
That was it, just a quick bit of news. I got to meet Matthew Modine, and I completely forgot that when we were talking about things that we did this week. So
I hear he's a very nice dude.
He was insanely nice. He stayed. So we went, the movie was late. It was at 9:30. It got out at 11:30, and he came back out. He walked out ahead of the movie and like surprised everybody by being, it was completely unannounced. And then after the movie, he came back and just did a Q&A and basically just told stories for like 45 minutes. And then he went out into the lobby and waited if you wanted to meet him and buy an audiobook and get it signed and stuff. Like, he just sat out there and he was shaking hands and saying hi to everybody and taking pictures and stuff. Like, he was just a super, super nice guy. Just very, very nice and easygoing. So
I'm glad
there till like one in the
I'm
morning,
glad Stranger dude. Things took off for him too, because that's like a huge, huge profile project, you know.
And he said something that I don't want to say now because it feels spoilery, not only for season one, but he mentioned Stranger Things, if that clues you into anything.
Excellent. I know exactly what that means.
Okay, cool. Then I will say no more. Because I feel like somebody on this podcast hasn't watched Stranger Things
That's
yet.
That's factually correct.
It's holding out.
Anyways, let's talk about this thing that none of us are going to be able to buy.
You want to know a sad thing? I had one in a cart today.
What?
Yeah, but it was a UK cart.
Oh, but they're not shipping.
One of our Twitter followers tweeted at me and was like, "They're up now." And I went and clicked and I put one in the cart and I was just like, "I can't buy this." First of all, I don't want to spend the money. And then I was like, "They probably don't ship to the United States."
Well, isn't the UK one different too? And it's got different everything. Wouldn't you have to get converters and like?
That was one of my questions. I don't think you have to get PAL encoded, but I know the Japanese version, the Famicom, has different games entirely. This one had the same lineup as as the US version. But either way, I didn't get it. I just was like, I want to see if I can get it, you know.
But there are rumors though that Amazon may potentially block people from outside of the UK from shipping to United States. So you may not have been able to get it anyways. People were not sort of sure what was going to happen.
So anyway, for our listeners, we're talking about the newly announced Nintendo SNES Classic with, I think, 21 of your favorite games from the early 90s, late 80s?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about... Let's just pretend. We're going to play a little game of pretendies.
Okay.
These are readily available. You can go to Walgreens and they just have them fucking laying around. They're just everywhere. Would you get one? $80.
$80. Yeah.
It's $80.
It's got 9 fewer games, but it's got an unreleased Star Fox 2, but it costs $20 more. And somebody on Twitter today brought up another interesting point too, which is like, it's 2017 and you need to hook this thing up to your television, which is kind of like a head scratcher. I mean, I get that it's a classic console and that's how it works, right? But like,
yeah,
people, not a lot of younger people watch TV or have TV, or maybe they consume a lot of their content on a handheld device or a computer. So,
This is aimed at us though.
Yeah.
And all of us have TVs.
For sure. For sure. You're right. But
do young people not have TVs now? Is that really like a thing?
None of my employees have TVs. Like literally, I think one of them does. That's under 30.
What, do they just like watch their phone?
Watch it on their iPad
and their computer.
Or I have one. Yeah, they watch it on their iPad or their laptop. And then I have one guy that has a nice like 32-inch monitor for his computer that he plays games on. Oh, and man, if he wants to watch it on something bigger, he'll plug it in to that.
So weird.
It's just like the
same
thing.
He says he just puts his laptop on his belly and watches it in bed, essentially. That's what he does.
Yeah, I mean, I would walk by, like when I was in school, I would walk by the desks of our like undergraduate research assistants, and you know, instead of listening to music on, you know, iTunes or Spotify or whatever, they're listening to music on YouTube, right? Like just pull up a full album.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And like that's and for the longest time that was weird to me. That it would just be
a
like
a couple of us may have a sister-in-law that would drive around in her car with YouTube videos playing on her phone to listen to music.
Yeah. So that's case in point, right? Is it's just obviously this is targeted at us, but you know, to somebody who I don't know, might be interested in this, it's like I don't even have a way to play this stuff, right? So it's a little
right.
I mean, I will say this about this specific one more so than the Nintendo for me. While I love the Nintendo, I didn't play a ton of Nintendo Classic because I didn't have one.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, and specifically the games they put on it, do sort of hit me right in the nostalgia feels, because these were games I played at Scott and Adam's house endlessly.
And in my opinion, these games are better. They are better.
Yeah, really good. There's some really good ones on here.
Yeah, I mean, between like Star Fox, Secret of Mana, Legend of Zelda...
Super Mario RPG,
like Earthbound, Super Punch Out, even Yoshi's Island, like these Super Metroid, Mario World, like these were games that I played a ton and played a ton at your house. Like I remember sitting around playing Secret of Mana with you guys.
Yes.
Like
yes.
So that is it's a slightly different argument because these are much more valid games, I think, to claim the money, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's still kind of like, I know how to run an emulator. You
That's
know, like,
the problem. My fear with like, if I walked into a store and I was able to buy this, my fear would be that I would buy it, bring it home, hook it up to the TV and play it for like 30 minutes and then never touch it again.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I would go like, oh my God, what did I just spend $80 on? You know, I could play this game on my computer, I'm sure I own some of these games on Virtual Console. I definitely own at least 12 of these games, like actually own them, right? So yeah. I haven't yet like pulled my Super Nintendo out of the closet and hooked it up yet. So chances are that I'm not really itching to play these games as much as I think I am, but it is nice to.
Yeah, but this is what you let them play in like 3 years. You know yes, what I mean? Like that's, you that's buy this point. And you're like, check this out. Like, you know, and then you just like hand him, you know, some games from your youth and let him train on these.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, you're absolutely right. And I think that's a fair and valid point. Yeah, you're right. So, I mean, I guess if that's the case,
you just talked him into it, Ash.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
I mean, it's just good because they're all in one place and you don't have to worry about running an emulator or him sitting down, like, you know, messing with tech. You can just like plug it in and
yeah.
hand him an old fashioned controller and be like, this is what I did when yeah. I was your age.
Well, you know? I mean, you're right. This is a fully nostalgic episode at this point, because now we're talking about like taking things and be like, here, you watch this. Like, this is what, this is what dad watched. It's like, yeah. you know. It's like Back to the Future too. It's like you have to use your hands. Yeah. You know.
yeah, this totally. Is all nostalgia. This entire episode has been nostalgia.
Pretty yeah. much.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But you know, these games are undeniably better. I do have some of them, but I guess, you know, if it is not for you, if it is a gift or if it's something you want to share with somebody else, that's probably the most compelling argument I've heard for it so far. You know, it doesn't have Tetris attack, so it's dead to me. That's pretty much where the argument ends, right? For anyone
that used to play, I know it was Pokemon attack, right? That you
yeah
would
we yeah, I mean
show I'm, up at parties in college and be like, sure, let's play, and people would challenge him, and he would just flat out murder. Every
oh, PPL man,
that
Pokemon Puzzle
him.
League. That's what it's all about. Started out. Remember we played? I remember we played Tetris attack at your house.
Yeah.
Like I think for like 8 hours, like overnight at one time. And then N64 came out, right? And then PPL came out, and I think we were kind of like transitioning to college at that point. And so, you know, we were meeting other people that would like have game consoles, but not like game as regularly as we did. And I'd be like, oh, you have Pokemon Puzzle League. Can we fire that up? And they're like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then all of a sudden it'd become like money matches, right? For like, just like put your quarters up and go through the line.
Well, to be fair, we had some dumb friends that would like belly up thinking that they knew everything about video games more than you. And then they'd be like, I can beat Scott. I can beat him. And I was like, go ahead. I can't even come close. So good luck.
That was my heyday. That was like my, like I was quarterback in high school moment, you know, was like, I was really good at PPL at one time. Anyways.
PPL.
Yeah.
Well, in a year, you'll get to buy the, you know, the Nintendo 64 Classic for $100.
I don't even know what you would put on that console, to be honest with you. Like, if it doesn't include Eternal Darkness or whatever, like, then who cares, right?
GoldenEye, so. Right?
Oh, no, that was a GameCube. Yeah, oh, no, that man. You got to put GoldenEye.
Oh, that was GameCube, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, GoldenEye would be N64, Perfect Dark. But yeah. See, now we're talking about, like, Rare Replay games, right, that you can get on Xbox, so...
The other thing I was going to say in a mention of this is that I found out that Sega released all of their, or is starting to release all of their Master System and even some Genesis games on iPhone, like
yes.
iPad.
So here's the perfect counter argument, right, to that is exactly what you just said.
Is yeah, like... I grabbed Phantasy Star 2 and Altered Beast and like loaded them. I played Phantasy Star 2 on the way home today. It was great.
That's Is that like the third person like action RPG? Is that what Phantasy Star was?
It's like the yeah, the top down RPG, Japanese RPG from like the early days.
Oh, is it the tactical
it's like
one?
It's like a weird space.
No. Thing. Oh, okay, yeah, that's the one. Which one is the tactical one that you really liked?
Shining Force.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I mean, so like Nintendo could do this. You know, they never will. Yeah. But you know. What if someone were to buy this and then all of a sudden, like, Nintendo Switch manifests a virtual console store and then some of these games become available on the Switch? Like, would you then would have rather owned them on the Switch? Or, you know, would you still be happy that you had this? Like, that's like where this right. falls into a very tricky area of, like, is this worth $80? Like, is this worth your time?
Well, Ash. I mean, I think it's... It's a collector's item, and that's like why Nintendo is producing so few of them. They said at this point they're only going to manufacture them until the end of December, and then they're going to stop manufacturing them. And, you know, when asked, well, why, you know, why only make so many? And they're like, it's sort of as a, you know, a gift to our fans. But, you know, we know that it's to generate those lines and generate that buzz. And so Nintendo's on the tip of people's tongues, right? They want it to be the hot Christmas item. So that people are talking about Nintendo, and it's basically a marketing tool to have limited number of, you know, their hot selling things. And so people are always thinking that they're rare and special and magical when they get a hold of one, and then they post on their social media and then people like it. And then they tell their friends that they want one. And, you know, it's a great plan and it's working for them.
Absolutely.
It's not the most honest plan, but I think it's a good marketing plan, right?
Yeah. I think I've convinced myself at this point that, you know, where, you know, Microsoft and Sony make game consoles and hardware and produce games, I've convinced myself that Nintendo is a toy maker that just happens to make video games from time to time. Because it's this whole idea of like exclusivity and not creating enough supply to meet demand in order to generate buzz.
Yeah.
It's just like, it all goes back to the, you know, back in the day again, where it's like, you'd have to show up at Toys R Us to get Ninja Turtles, and like, parents would fight other parents in order to get stuff like that, right? And they're still kind of like in that model of you know, it's what they do with the Amiibos, it's what they do with these classic consoles, and then, I mean, apparently it's what they're doing with the Switch, even though that makes no sense whatsoever, because,
right,
you know, how would you build your base if you can't, if no one can buy it?
I mean,
why get excited about ARMS if you can't buy the console, right?
I give them a little leeway on the Switch because it seems like Hardware manufacturing for a tablet or a phone is not always the easiest, and it's easy to get screwed by warehouses getting overrun by probably Apple, mm-hmm. you know, but
yep.
who knows what's going on there. But yeah, I mean, this false notion of collectability is weird, it feels like the vinyl toy like thing, you know, like when it launched, it was like, oh, you can only get, you know, I'm looking for the pink splattered, you know, money of blah, blah, blah. And it's like this crazy false creation of exclusivity, you know, like they purposely make few of them so that they can sell them for buku dollars and then create a secondary market that creates buzz that lets them create more things later, which is not a dumb move. It's just weird. It's a weird thing to do.
But it's like, how many more? Yeah. I just think that eventually
I'm calling N64 Classic, by the way.
Yeah.
It'll be next time.
I mean, eventually though, I feel like this is just going to backfire, because you see, you know, Nintendo tweeting about it online. You see like Amazon and Best Buy going like, hey, are you excited about this? And like all of the comments are like, you know, fuck scalpers. Like, this is BS. Like, am I going to be able to buy one? Like, you know, hey, Amazon, are you going to put the pre-orders up at like 4 a.m. Pacific time where like no one can buy one? Stuff like that. So I think like it is generating a lot of buzz, and maybe like all press is good press, but, you know, it's certainly worn me down and kind of like turned me away from the brand at this point.
Yeah.
Well, shoot, guys. I mean, we probably won't end up getting one, but I think, you know, if it was readily available, I think it's a cool option. Especially, you have to think, a lot of people aren't huge gamers, and I think $80 is a great price point for, you know, someone that might be going off to college, or someone that, you know, might want to get a console for their kid. I think it's perfect.
Or a husband whose wife doesn't want him to game, but he can get this as like a weird nostalgia thing to throw on the TV with the kids, like,
right? Yeah, absolutely,
that kind of thing. Yeah, I don't think it's aimed at the college kids. I'm just being dead honest. This is like such a crazy miss if it's aimed at the college kids, that's hilarious, you know, because they don't, like Scott said, they don't have TVs. they're not doing this. Like, it's just not a thing in that generation. So
that's true.
Hi, I'm Ashley Birch, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
All right, so I went to the theater and saw Resident Evil Vendetta, which is actually available
now.
Wait,
you saw it in the theater?
I saw it in the theater, man.
The theater.
I got really excited. It's funny. A long time ago, my wife and I got to see like the first Resident Evil animated film, like out at San Diego Comic Con.
And you see it on a pirate ship or something?
It wasn't on a pirate ship. It was in like a weird
Henry Cavill on a pirate ship.
I did meet Henry Cavill on a pirate ship. Yeah. And my wife and about 300 other women were swarming around him like buzzards. It was pretty awesome. but anyway, so since I saw it at Comic-Con, I've kind of become a fan of these Resident Evil animated films. They're honestly, they're like just extended cutscenes from the games, and so they follow the plot line of the game series a lot more closely than the Mila Jovovich action films. They're actually canonical too, so if you care anything about the Resident Evil story, which I don't think the writers of the Resident Evil stories care about the story, but if you care about the Resident Evil story, this is actually Sick part burn. Of Resident Evil. Yeah, I know. I'm horrible. but anyway, Vendetta came out for one night only as a Fathom event. You guys ever see those Fathom event advertisements? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've never gone to one.
Mm-hmm. This is my first one. It was kind of cool. It was like, there's like 10 other Resident Evil fans there and, they advertised only other Fathom events. It was cool. So Fathom events, for those that don't know what a Fathom event is, very like niche type things. We'll have like a one night screening in just a handful of theaters across the nation. And sometimes they'll do like behind the scenes stuff or Q&A, things like that. So there was actually a Q&A with the voice actors prior to Vendetta, which was cool. They weren't there in person. It was pre-recorded stuff. But, I mean, I actually ended up really enjoying it. It's a silly action take on the Resident Evil franchise where they brought back a lot of fan favorite characters like Chris Redfield and Leon S. Kennedy and Rebecca Chambers, who hasn't been in the series for, I think, well over a decade at this point. I can't remember if Rebecca's been in any of the past games. I think it's been since like Resident Evil Zero, which was like a GameCube game. So she hasn't been around for a while. So they brought her back. And, you know, the thing I liked about it has a pretty solid voice cast. Matt Mercer comes back as Leon S. Kennedy. Aaron Cahill is Rebecca Chambers. And they take the things that I like about Resident Evil and just kind of amplify it times like 1,000 for these animated films. Mm-hmm. So there's a scene where like Chris and Leon are fighting zombies, but it turns into like a John Woo, John Wick kind of like, it's like totally like a John Wick film where they're just like doing kung fu flips and like basically doing gun fu against like an army of zombies, like flipping over each other and you know, jumping off motorcycles and doing backflips with machine guns. And it's total insanity, ridiculousness. And it's like, you know, the things that you love about Resident Evil, that and giant ridiculous monsters with big eyes popping out of their heads. And you know, I don't want to give any plot stuff away because it actually is available now digitally. If you're into Resident Evil at all and you're like, huh, I need a good Resident Evil action film, you can get it now. I think it's like 10, 15 bucks on digital platforms. And I think it's definitely worth picking up. It's, you know, it's all about the spread of this new strain of the virus and Chris and Leon having to work together when they have very different, you know, it's like a buddy cop film with Chris and Leon. So they took the two most popular male leads and then they have Rebecca there who kind of plays, unfortunately, a bit of the damsel in distress. And, you know, they go on this adventure to try and save her and to kill some big old creatures. So I would say pick it up if you like Resident Evil. So that's called Vendetta.
That's cool, man. I'm glad you liked it. There's been like, you know, what, like 10 Resident Evil movies? And, it's just kind of cool that they're enjoyable, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was cool to see the animated feature in theaters. Like it was really gorgeously animated. Like I was really a big fan. Like the action sequences were spot on. They were great. They looked, you know, better than the games. And, I really feel like, you know, it was silly. I mean, it's silly, like B movie action and dialogue, but at the same time, it's like, what do you expect?
Like, how would you describe the animation? Like, is it like, was it like a Japanese film or?
Yeah. I mean, it was, all the action was mocapped. So it was fluid as hell. It looked really, really solid, incredibly gory. a lot of the things that they did with different weapons and different, you know, takedowns and stuff was really innovative and really fun. And I feel like all of the acting of the digital characters was, since it was all mocap, it had facial mocap too.
Oh, cool.
So it looked great. Like, it looked like, you know, some of the best that you see in games today, but for, you know, 90 minutes. So,
nice.
You know, there's definitely a lot of money and a lot of time put into it. It wasn't cheesy. It didn't look bad. Like, a lot of the character design was really sharp too. So I think, you know, like I said, I think it's a really solid, you know, CG movie for a series that is kind of long of tooth at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
It was fun.
Let's talk about, maybe you guys can tell me a little bit about Glow.
Yeah.
Glow, man.
The gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
Yeah. So that's Glow just came out last week on Netflix.
Yep.
And I can say this, it's really good.
I feel like this kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, for me at least, I see billboards all over town for it, and people are like stoked on it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how do you really describe this? I guess we should start by describing to our listeners that may be a little bit younger what Glow is, and then kind of how the show is the same and different from what it, you know, Glow is really like. So that's, I guess, a good way to kind of talk about it.
Sure. I mean, first of all, I'd recommend, there's a Glow documentary that I think I talked to you guys about. I don't think I talked about it on the podcast, but there's a Glow documentary on Netflix still right now that follows the actual real life women of Glow. And kind of catches up with where they are now, and they tell their story of what really happened behind, like, when Glow formed in the, what was it, like, late 80s, right? Was Glow?
Yeah, it was 85 to 90, so it was about a five-year run.
And it was basically this notion, it was like kind of like a, it wasn't affiliated with any of the big, with WWF at the time was what it was, or anything. It was just this standalone sort of like operatic, in a way, women wrestling in character with all of the kind of you know, craziness and accoutrement of WWF, but even more zany characters, I would say.
Yeah, they would do skits. Scott would love it because they do skits, they did raps, they did all sorts of like crazy.
Scott, did you never watch this? Because you were such a wrestling guy, and I watched this growing up.
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and find it, because you're right, I did watch a lot of wrestling as a kid, and I don't know that I saw this.
Crazy. But yeah, so watch the documentary if you really want to know what it was about, because it the documentary is really good, and you'll kind of fall in love with all the ladies because they're super in love with each other and they're just all sweetheart ladies.
Yeah, it's a great documentary. It's really good.
Oh, did you watch it? Yeah,
I watched it. After I finished the show, I was like, I need more.
Yeah. So the show kind of does a fictionalized take, sort of like, I don't know, would you call it a dramedy? I guess it's like a drama comedy somewhat.
Definitely has some heavy stuff, especially in the latter half. There's some heavy stuff, but
yeah,
it's like same, like, I don't know if you've seen Orange is the New Black. It's showrunners, but it's the same tonally, where it's funny, but it's dark and real at the same time.
Yeah. And it follows Alison Brie, who plays this sort of failing actress who finds this audition through a reference to go for this thing that she didn't know what it ended up being. And it ended up being an audition to be one of the ladies of Glow. And then it's a whole cast of characters that they kind of build. It's very ensemble-ish in the same way that Orange is the New Black follows. I'm going to forget her name, the blonde.
Piper's the character.
Piper. Yeah. Follows Piper, but really is about this ensemble cast. I think Glow is sort of similar in that way. The story's kind of, I haven't finished the series yet, but you did, but it seems like it spins out a little bit beyond just Alison Brie's character.
Yeah, absolutely. She's at least, for the beginning of the show, she's like sort of, you see and learn about the world through her eyes, but then it like you said, it expands and you kind of learn about everybody else too.
Yeah.
And the ensemble is just incredible. They're great.
It's great. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's a good set. It is a really fun show. It's very funny. It's super easy and digestible to watch in the way that Netflix makes things. And then you highlighted some characters. There's one I added because I feel like Scott will be interested. I can't remember. I don't know if he remembers who this is, but so it's Alison Brie in the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Ellen Wong from Scott Pilgrim. She played Knives on Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, cool.
So cool to see her back. I love
She's
Knives.
Great, yeah. A bunch of these people I was like Googling because I was like, I know all these women. Like they're all from different things that they pulled from. Mark Maron, who's the comedian Mark Maron, he plays kind of the, he does the WTF podcast and he has Maron the show on IFC. But he plays
He's
fantastic, yeah.
He's really good.
He plays the director that's like kind of putting it all together.
Yeah.
I was at work. I want to say I was at work. Was it Sean? I either saw this tweeted or I was at work and somebody brought up that they would love to see him do a biopic and be Stan Lee, like Marvel Comics, that he would play it perfectly, kind of berating all the comic artists and writers. Betty Gilpin from Nurse Jackie. And then this is the one I thought you might remember. Scott, do you remember who Kate Nash is?
Yeah, the singer, right?
Yeah, she plays a girl named Rhonda Richardson on this. She's this like crazy redheaded British girl on the show.
Oh, awesome.
And she is Kate Nash. Like her voice, she didn't really change her voice or anything. And she's sort of this like ditzy British lady on as a character.
Well, that's awesome. I actually had never listened to Kate Nash's music until today. Like I was writing some stuff today and I put like one of her albums on. And she's really good. She's really good.
Yeah, she's
great. If you listen to Foundation, you'll never stop singing it for the rest of your life. It is like the catchiest song ever created.
That's
the one where she's like, the cracks in our foundation.
I saw that video pop up too.
Oh,
but
awesome.
Yeah, but I mean, the cast is phenomenal. And like the thing I wanted to point out is the music is just incredible. They had like, it has the best soundtrack and the pacing's just fun. It did something too that I don't know if Stranger Things like really did this, but this felt like really like the 80s to me. I don't know what it was about this show, but like I think it's because when I was a kid in the 80s I watched a lot of wrestling. I didn't really watch GLOW. It would pop on, but it was too young and it was too out there for me. I think it was also on like really late where I was living, so like maybe I would only watch it when I was like super sick or something, because like I barely remember GLOW. Like I remember it popping up, but I wasn't tuning in all the time. But it captured that vibe, just like the way people dressed and talked and the clothes and the cars, and I'm just like, oh man, like this I totally remember like growing up in this era.
I'm so excited to watch this.
Yeah, you'll really like it, man. Like the music is just fun and there's a lot of really cool just 80s nostalgia just like dripping from the show.
And it's funny too. Like they just it's very, if you like Orange is the New Black, you should watch it. It's very similar in kind of comedic tone. But it's really good. Like I really really did or am enjoying it. I'm sort of the same, Ash. The more I'm thinking about it, like I know I watched it. It wasn't appointment watching for me by any means. Like I wasn't tuning in, but I was such a weird little TV addict growing up that like I would just watch everything. And I vividly remember watching this. Melissa watched this a ton and was super excited when I turned it on. I was like, oh, let's watch GLOW. And she was like, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. And I was like, what?
That's great.
She was like, I used to watch this and act it out with my sister. I think with your wife, I believe. So,
whoa,
that's
super
awesome.
Cool.
That's awesome. I think Scott, your wife would absolutely love this show. I think this is like right up your wife's alley.
Oh yeah, we definitely plan to watch it for sure.
Cool.
Neat.
Well,
watch GLOW, everybody.
We did it. My voice is totally shot. Thank you, sickness, for destroying me.
Well, you made it.
We did. Thank you guys so much for listening to episode 277 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. That's at NerdAppropriate. Please say hi to us there. You can email us directly, and that's Matt, Scott, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. We have a Facebook page, which is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. What is our Mixer, Scott?
We are Mixer.com/team or teams, whatever the team handle is. But we're /RatedNA on Mixer right now.
Nice.
Cool.
And we are /NerdAppropriate on Twitch TV as well. And one of these days, keep saying it, but we're going to stream something, maybe.
We'll get there.
And upcoming stuff, we will be at San Diego Comic-Con in a couple weeks. Yeah. So look for us there. If you are a listener, we're probably going to do a little impromptu meetup like we have done in the past. So reach out to us on social media and tell us that you're going to be there, and we will say hi to you. And other than that, we'll be back next week with an all-new show. Talk to you guys later.
Good.
Bye.
Go ahead, man. Mine's brief.
I was going to say you go ahead because I currently have wontons in my mouth.
Oh, okay.
Whoa, okay. Well, okay. So,